Singer David Johansen did all sorts of anti-establishment things on stage when he was fronting the New York Dolls in the early 1970s, gaining notoriety and inventing punk rock in the process. I was amazed when, only a few years later, Johansen fully immersed himself in the superficial ethos he was rebelling against, appearing as lounge lizardy Buster Poindexter, sporting a tuxedo and mile-high pompadour while crooning old standards. There are a lot of reasons musicians hide behind alter egos. It gives them a chance to adopt different personalities, perform new material, stretch their wings without diluting their original brand. This has gone on for a long time in all different genres. Hank Williams recorded as Luke the Drifter when he wanted to do religious material while preserving his outlaw image. It was great to see Damon Albarn of Britpop band Blur become the fictional animated character Murdoch of Gorillaz. Paul McCartney released two albums of instrumental electronic music under the name The Fireman. Garth Brooks became Chris Gaines in maybe the most elaborate identity switch of all. There's even a mock documentary about the fictional grunge rocker. Sometimes a nom de guerre supports the narrative of a song or album, like Shock G as Humpty Hump or David Bowie as Ziggy Stardust. Hip-hop artists have really run with this idea. How many other names has P. Diddy gone by? But sometimes the use of a pseudonym is dictated by market forces. Classical American composer Rebecca Clark published under the male pseudonym Anthony Trent to overcome sexist bias. Lots of jazz players would famously and not so transparently change their names for recording dates to sidestep their contracts. Charlie Parker would be billed as Charlie Chan, Art Pepper as Art Salt, and Fats Navarro as Slim Romero. Then, of course, there's the case of Prince, who changed his name to an unpronounceable symbol to protest treatment under his record contract. But what's in a name, anyway? Good musicians will make good music, regardless of style or publicity.
As we come out with a little Buster Poindexter there, I'm Fletcher Powell. I'm here, of course, with Mark Foley as we welcome you to Musical Space. And Mark, for me, I'm actually young enough that I didn't experience David Johansen as David Johansen when he was David Johansen with New York Dolls. But my first experience with him was Buster Poindexter.
Right.
So for me, for you, you had the shock of seeing him switch from New York Dolls to this completely other character.
Right, yeah.
For me, I was shocked when I found out he used to be this punk rocker in New York Dolls. What do you have any idea for him specifically what the what his reasoning was to move to as you say, a character that he was basically rebelling against?
I think the bottom line with Buster is, or with David Johansen, I should say, he's a great performer. He's a great performer no matter what. I think, you know, it doesn't matter if he's doing show tunes or punk rock, whatever. He's got a lot to say just as a performer. Doesn't matter the style, really. And that's kind of the point here, is style is just, you know, an illusion.
So for him, is it a performative thing? There are just these other things that he wants to do, and it's easier to do it under this other name?
Yeah, I'd imagine. I mean, he was just as theatrical as David Johansen. I mean, he wore women's clothes, and I don't know. I've been trying to research all the outrageous things he did on stage, and there were a lot of things. So he gained a lot of notoriety just doing these wacky things on stage. And I think it became just as theatrical when he became this lounge lizard guy, Buster Poindexter, wearing these outlandish tuxedos and crazy hair and, you know, drinking martinis on stage and stuff. Kind of a Rat Pack person on crack kind of thing. I don't know. It was pretty amazing.
Do you know, when this sort of thing happens, I mean, I would certainly assume that he had plenty of his fans from his time with New York Dolls. For some people, there might be a certain tendency to feel betrayed by this sort of thing.
Yeah, I know. It's sad. Yeah, you bring up this, you build up this fan base and then abandon it. Yeah, I don't know about that too. It's sad. I hope the listeners stuck with him, because the guy was amazing on stage no matter what he was doing.
I mean, clearly an artist has every right to do exactly what he or she wants to be doing at any particular time.
Right. Yeah. And you know, one of the reasons to change your name, change your persona, is to get into a different audience. So I'm sure he sold 100 times more albums as Buster Poindexter. He actually hit with Hot, Hot, Hot.
Yep.
If you remember that tune.
Ole, 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 ole. Ole, 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 ole. Yes,
Well, certainly there's no shortage, as you said, of artists who've gone through these persona changes, taken on alter egos and that sort of thing. As you are great about doing, you brought along a playlist of some of these artists. One you have here that I find very interesting that he felt the need to take on another persona to do this is John Lurie. As you mentioned, he has done a lot of avant-garde type jazz. He just kind of does whatever he wants to.
Yeah.
Throughout his artistic career, whether it's music or whether it's filmmaking or whether it's visual arts. And so I guess I was a little surprised that John Lurie, of all people, felt the need to take on an alter ego, because he really does just kind of do whatever he wants.
Yeah,
anyway.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. People probably know him more as an actor than anything else. He's been in a couple of really great Jim Jarmusch movies. So I'm a huge fan of John Lurie. And I don't know, I was just going down the YouTube rabbit hole and ended up listening to this guy, Marvin Pontiac, who is John Lurie. But he's created this persona, I suppose, so that he could have a very narrow focus on a real kind of world beat thing, which, you know, would be a different audience than his avant-garde kind of abrasive jazz that he plays in New York City, you know, with real heavies out there. So yeah, I could see where he'd want to explore this. And his beautiful music, this tune Small Car, is just a really gorgeous little understated, not abrasive at all kind of piece. And he has a lot to say with it.
This is a story about a place very, very, very far away from here, where tiny little farmers live with their families. Small, one-inch-long barking dogs, and they make their cars out of cans. These farmers thought that there must be a way to know why the stars are shining, and they wanted to see, and they decided to go on a mission.
I guess I say that I wonder why he felt the need to change his name, because he generally does whatever he wants to anyway. I guess that's my answer. He does what he wants to anyway, so why not change your name?
Well, I mean, there was a little controversy I uncovered. I mean, he's doing, or I should say he was worried about being accused of appropriation, you know, like taking music from another culture and then making it his own. So I think he wanted it to definitely be a side project and not his main brand, if you know what I mean. I read an interview with him, and it turns out there was no backlash at all, which is good, because it's beautiful music.
It is. It's beautiful. Yeah. And I find that interesting that he was so conscious of that, that he felt taking on the pseudonym
right,
was probably
yeah,
the best idea. Another person, of course, you mentioned just a few minutes ago, Garth Brooks as Chris Gaines. I personally remember when this happened, but don't know how successful he was at it. Garth Brooks seemed to be going through a strange period at that point, trying to decide whether to retire or to do this complete other project with Chris Gaines. Can you talk about just what he was doing here a little bit?
I don't know. Seems like a total publicity stunt for me. But I'm not to diminish what he was doing. I mean, that's great that he can try these things. I think bottom line with him too, Garth Brooks is a great entertainer, and he's kind of making the statement, it doesn't matter what style I'm doing, I can be great. And I'm not a huge fan of Chris Gaines stuff, but still, it's out there, and I'm glad he did it, you know?
I will say that somebody who was as popular, and is still quite popular, but as popular as Garth Brooks was at one time, to take that kind of chance to become a completely different person or stage persona, that takes a lot of guts.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the publicity photos, he looks more like Trent Reznor than anybody else. I wonder what his record company had to say about all this.
And then, of course, you mentioned a number of jazz musicians changing their names. Was this usually a contract issue, or was it just kind of the world? I'm thinking, of course, specifically, you mentioned Charlie Parker as Charlie Chan.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, Charlie Parker, the greatest saxophone player ever to live. He was on a recording contract, just like everybody else, just like Prince. Could not get out of the contract, could not be on someone else's label under his name, unless, I don't know, I suppose somebody would have to pay a lot of money. And, you know, jazz, nobody has that kind of money. So, yeah, he recorded as Charlie Chan in this. I highly recommend this CD, Jazz at Massey Hall. These guys are the living legends of jazz. We've got Bud Powell, Max Roach, Charlie Mingus. I can't believe. Oh, and is Dizzy Gillespie? Yeah, Dizzy Gillespie's on there too. These guys, I can't believe we're in the same room together, let alone the same stage. And it was recorded, and the recordings are furious. But here's Charlie Parker, the greatest one of all, and he can't use his name, so they call him Charlie Chan, and they released it. And highly recommend you listen to it. It's amazing.
At this time, we would like to play a tune that was composed by my worthy constituent, Mr. Dizzy Gillespie, in the year 1942. We sincerely hope you do enjoy Salt Peanuts.
Salt peanuts. Salt peanuts. The name of the salt. Salt peanuts.
Again, of course, the hip-hop world, as you said, is full of this kind of thing, taking on alter egos. You have one person that you mentioned in particular, which actually, again, for me, I came to know this person as his alter ego before I knew him as his normal ego in digital underground.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I knew him as Humpty Hump. I didn't know he was Shock G. So there's a lot going on with this guy. But I'm kind of glad. I mean, Humpty Hump, if you remember, he wore these Groucho Marx glasses with this, what was it, a silver plated nose?
Giant nose. That's
yeah,
all.
Yeah, huge. And then he had like really, really distasteful plaid sport coats they would wear. It was crazy. So I'm glad he had a life outside that, you know? but yeah, Humpty Hump hit, and it's one of my favorite all-time guilty pleasures. I love this tune. Side note, Tupac was touring with Humpty Hump.
Wow.
And they were touring this stuff.
All right, stop what you're doing, because I'm about to ruin the image and the style that you're used to. I look funny. But yo, I'm making money, see? So yo, world, I hope you're ready for me. Now gather round. I'm the new fool in town, and my sound's laid down by the underground. I drink a bottle of Hennessy you got on your shelf. So just let me introduce myself. My name is Humpty, pronounced with the umpty. Yo, ladies, oh, how I like to funk thee. And all the rappers in the top 10, please allow me to bump thee. I'm stepping tall, y'all, and just like Humpty Dumpty, you're gonna fall when the stereos pump me. I like to rhyme, I like my beats funky, I'm spunky. I like my oatmeal lumpy, I'm sick with this. Straight gangster Mac, but sometimes I get ridiculous. I'll eat up all your crackers and your licorice. Oh, yo, fat girl, come here, are you ticklish? Yeah, I called you fat, look at me, I'm skinny. It never stopped me from getting busy, I'm a freak. I like the girls with the boom. I once got busy in a Burger King bathroom, I'm crazy. Allow me to amaze thee. They say I'm ugly, but it just don't faze me. I'm still getting in the girls' pants, and I even got my own dance.
The Humpty Dance is your chance to do it all.
This actually brings up something I've been curious about for a while with hip-hop specifically. There are all of these alter egos, and I wonder if because sometimes in hip-hop people take a little bit too seriously what an MC is saying. And I'm thinking specifically of things like violence, because if you listen to Neil Young sing about Down by the River, I Shot My Baby, you don't actually think that Neil Young is talking about doing that. Or promoting doing that. But with hip-hop, it's right. Different. A hip-hop MC often is not seen as a character in a song, but rather as actually promoting whatever he's talking about. And that seems
right. To
be a problem.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there can be double standards in this. Yeah, this... Boy, yeah, you've opened up a can of worms here. This is a whole nother show
yeah.
we can do about this. But yeah, to put it short, yeah, I agree that every style has a sort of dark side to it that becomes exclusionary, and it's a way of putting off people that are not hip to the style, and that goes with every style, even classical music. You know, if you don't come to a classical concert dressed appropriately, people are going to look down at you. So that's, I would call that exclusionary behavior. It's something we're all guilty of, and I'm sorry, you know. But yeah, country music has all these lyrics about, you know, going to a bar and getting in fights and getting drunk and all that stuff. Yeah, very sad that can reflect on the artist himself. You see a million examples of it. And okay, let's write a book about this.
Here's something you've actually talked about before when you've talked about, in a larger sense, virtual bands, so almost entire alter egos of bands or bands that don't actually exist. You mentioned Damon Albarn, who went from Blur to Gorillaz.
Yeah, Blur is an amazing band. I love that band. But then I think, yeah, he wanted to create a persona where he could go in other artistic directions. And so here's this band, Gorillaz, with a Z, amazing band. And he paired up with an anime artist and created an animated character. I think it's the perfect device for him. We're going to see a lot more bands like this in the future. Absolutely.
stepping in harder this year. Yeah, been rapping in harder this year. Watch me as I gravitate. Ha 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 ha. We gon' ghost town, this Motown with your sound. You in the blink, gon' bite the dust, can't fight with us. With your sound, you kill the ink. So don't stop, get it until you chant it.
And then maybe very specifically going back to the idea that you talked about of an artist not wanting to dilute his brand, you mentioned Hank Williams becoming Luke the Drifter for a very specific reason.
Right, yeah. I mean, he's the ultimate country outlaw, right? Mm-hmm. But there's all this great, great religious material in the country repertoire, and he wanted to sing it. So changed his name to Luke the Drifter, and now he can sing a song like Men with Broken Hearts.
You'll meet many just like me up on life's busy street, with shoulders stooped and heads bowed low and eyes that stare in defeat. For souls that live within the past, where sorrow plays all parts, for a living death is all that's left for men with broken hearts. You have no right to be the judge, to criticize and condemn. Just think, but for the grace of God, it would be you instead of him. One careless step or thoughtless deed, and then the misery starts. And to those who weep, death comes cheap, these men with broken hearts.
Somebody you mentioned who's used many pseudonyms, which actually surprises me given his high profile, and again, as someone who, it seems, could do whatever he wanted to, Paul McCartney.
Yeah, the guy has a work ethic. I can't believe it. I mean, he works too hard for just one persona, right? Sometimes if he'll produce someone else's album, he'll use a different name. I think I came up with a list of 4 or 5 names, but this is one of them, The Fireman, and it's instrumental music, definitely way outside his normal Liverpool brand. People who are Beatles fans might not necessarily think this is the greatest stuff in the world. I think it's really, really sensitive, really beautiful music. This song, Bison, is a case in point.
Going back to that, how did McCartney market this kind of thing? Does he still use the fact that he's Paul McCartney to market his side projects with other names, or are they released as if they just weren't him at all?
That's a good question. I don't know if The Fireman came out anonymously first. I'd like to think that it did. You know, I'd like to think that he did this to see how it would fly. You know,
I like that story better.
Yeah, right.
And finally, something certainly a band a lot of people remember and you describe as what's maybe your favorite of all of these.
Oh, I love this band. Okay, XTC, one of my favorite bands from the 80s. They were, I would say Thinking Man's pop. They were kind of like the logical next step beyond the Beatles as far as English songwriting goes. Really meticulous use of the recording studio. Just go out and listen to XTC. Amazing stuff. But again, the lead singer, Andrew Partridge, he's just an amazing workaholic and was really interested in earlier styles, like the psychedelic music from the 60s. So they renamed their band Dukes of Stratosphere and put out two albums in this like earlier, maybe early Pink Floyd style. You know, maybe they sound like Steppenwolf a little bit, or I don't know. But he's definitely hearkening back. And this song, 25 O'Clock, to me, out Pink Floyd's Pink Floyd. I just absolutely love this song. And it's hard to tell that it was released, 20 years after the music that he was listening to was released.
That's it for Musical Space for this week. Mark Foley, as always, thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks, Fletcher.
And for KMUW, I'm Fletcher Powell.